This is our, as I mentioned, our family of six, starting with our oldest, Eli, or Elijah, Hala, Kyle, Charlotte, and then Sophia and Jenna, and then my wife is expecting again, she's due in February, and we are very blessed and we're thankful for that. We are serving with New Tries Mission, as you know, and we are also members of the Evangelical Missionary Church of Canada, and so we partner with them. And I'll explain a little bit more how that works in just a minute. But the purpose of us working amongst the Gutdown people is that we have the goal of being able to present the gospel to these people. And how that works is we go and we live amongst them, and we learn their language and their culture, so that as we begin to prepare Bible lessons and teach them, keep chronological Bible lessons leading from creation, going from creation through to the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ. We lead them through this process of developing a foundation so that when they come to that point of being able to make that decision and having an understanding of the saving knowledge of what Christ has done with them, for them, they can do that with an understanding that makes sense. And then from there, we go on to discipling them, because we want this new body of believers that we are looking for to be able to function on their own as a body of believers, be self-governing, and to be able to reach out beyond themselves to their neighbor, to the neighbors in their village, the neighboring villages around them, and hopefully beyond that, beyond their borders of their tribal region. And so that's what New Tribes Mission is about. How we are connected with the Missionary Church is that a vital part of the work that we do is that we have folks like you that partner with us both in prayer and financially and in encouraging us as we go. And so we are just simply an extension of you folks here in the work that we do. You are a part of taking the gospel to the Gutdown people. And so that, in a nutshell, kind of explains some of how this works. Okay. Now, as mentioned, we are working in the Philippines. We've been there since 2005, but it wasn't until 2009, after we returned from our last home assignment, that we began our ministry amongst the Gutdown people. And if you wonder where the Philippines is, look at the arrow, or on a map you might look for the donkey's head. And we work in the northern part of the Philippines, on the island of Luzon, in the foothills of the Cordillera Mountains. And I'll explain a little bit of what that looks like here in just a little bit. We work in a village called Parati. This is what it looks like from the air, and the arrows kind of point to where our houses are now. And as mentioned, it's an area that's rolling hills and lots of mud. And the Gutdown people are primarily agricultural people. They are farmers, and many of them plant corn on any available piece of land that they can. Many of those fields are slopes that look like this. And they grow two crops of corn a year. And that corn, they plant and harvest it all by hand. It's like going back 150 years here in a lot of ways, as the only machine that they have is a little threshing machine that takes the corn off the cobs for them, and they sack it, and they haul it out to town where it is sold for pig feed. And that's how they provide for their families by making money. They also grow corn, they grow rice. They do one crop of rice a year, and a lot of that rice is done on the mountainside, so it's a dry variety of rice. Very, very delicious. But again, a lot of work involved, from planting to harvesting, and then right down to preparing it to be able to feed their families. Every day, every morning, we hear the sound of them pounding their rice as they pound it off the husks. And they go through a process of pounding it three times in order to prepare it so that they can cook it. And that's their main staple as they what they eat. The Gutdown people are also, a lot of the guys are good with a chainsaw, and so they cut lumber to be able to sell and make money that way as well. And the Gutdown people just like to try and enjoy life with whatever they've got, and just They're very easygoing people, and they know how to work well with their hands. The Gatnam are also a very family-oriented community, and we see that in a lot of different ways, whether it comes to raising their kids and just going through the chores, the daily routines that they have. But we also see that in a lot of other areas as well. In the community, there's a very strong sense of community spirit with the Gatnam people. And we see this in everything from meeting to discuss issues within the community to different things like weddings that are happening. It's all a community event, and the whole community comes together to be involved in that process. And right down to funerals. And funerals, as I'll explain in a little bit, are a very intense community event that happens over the course of a full week in our tribe, where they have to stay up and they guard the body through that 7 days, 24 hours a day. And it's an amazing process to watch as they go through this. And we also have a local elementary school run by the government in our area. The Philippines is very big in pushing education, and so there's an elementary school that runs from grade 1 to 6, and we are very blessed in that the two teachers that run and teach at our school are actually Gatnam teachers, which is not very common. And if you ask us a little bit later, we can explain a little bit more of how that works. As a family, we moved into the village of Paradi permanently in 2010. Once our house was at the point where we could live in it. And our kids, right from the beginning, became part of the community and just being a part of the other kids in the village and just enjoying being kids in the setting that they were in. Or whether it was Sophia running out the door every time she heard kids outside, friends, friends, and away she'd go. Or Kyle learning how to ride the water buffalo. He knows all the sounds and how to steer the thing. Don't ask me, ask him. And just even just every aspect of life, the kids have just learned to adapt and be a part. And our daughter Sophia was able to participate in the daily a daycare program that is also run by the government in our village as well. So the little white kid on the end. Really, she fits in quite well. And we've been blessed with a wonderful house that many people have been a part of getting ready for us so that we could live in the village and be a part of the ministry there, reaching out to the Gatnam people. So we're thankful for that. Well, you may be wondering, how does it work for us to get into our village? Well, it happens in a number of different ways. In the beginning for us, the only way to get into our village was by land. And so we could drive from a major city, about 2 to 3 hours, to a point where the trail would meet the road. And then we could, in the dry season, which is about 2 months of the year, we could hire trucks to bring supply and us into the village on this trail, and but that's only about 2 months out of the year. Most of the year, the road gets too muddy, and so we have to hike into the village. And so that would be us. Every few weeks, we would load up, and away we'd go. We'd be quite the sight, as we would hire men from our village to come out with their water buffalo and their sleds, and we'd load them up, and sometimes we'd have 12, 15 of these sleds and water buffalo following us on into the village, and we were quite the sight. But that's what we would do, and that's how we would get into the village for the first year. Our mission had been working on getting a helicopter for our region to be able to provide flight service for us and for other tribal stations as well. And it was finally in April of 2011 that was made possible, and what a blessing. We went from a 2 to 3 hour drive and then a 2 to 3 hour hike on a good day to a 20-minute flight. What a blessing, I gotta tell you. So we were able to use that for supplies and us, and then for emergencies as well. And we can tell you some of the stories of that later on if you want to ask us. But sometimes the helicopter's not available. And there's a verse in Isaiah 52 that talks about beautiful feet. There you go. And about every 3 months or so, we try and take a break out of the village. or we go to Manila or other places where we can do doctor's appointments, do some buying of supplies that we need that we can't get in the local area, and just enjoying a break as a family. And we definitely need that. So what does the day in the life look like for us? Well, let me start with Shannon. Let's sum it up. She's one busy lady. Running our house and taking care of the kids and homeschooling. She has a couple of ladies that work with her in the house, and we are very thankful for that. It's very culturally appropriate for us to be able to hire some of the ladies to be able to help. And these are two in particular that have been a huge blessing to Shannon. And it not only helps her but in getting things done around the house, but it also helps her in learning the language and the culture as well. Because a lot of Shannon's time is taken up in these things, and so she doesn't have a lot of time at this point for formal language study. What we have done in the past is had someone come and help homeschool our kids. We've had two different ladies come. And this young lady, Jessica, was with us in 2009. And since that time, Shannon has been homeschooling the kids on her own. And that's become increasingly more time-consuming for her as we have now have five kids in the homeschool. And so if you know of anybody or you're interested yourself in coming and helping out in that sense, it doesn't take much. My wife, she can do it. These young ladies that came, they were fresh out of high school. You could be a retired teacher. You could be a young lady. You could be a guy that's looking for a break for 6 months. We'll take anybody. Really. And so Shannon does get out when she can. And a lot, as I mentioned, a lot of her learning is done informally. But the Lord has blessed her with ladies that have been so willing to come alongside her and take her and do the things that they do. And so she gets out as much as she can, usually every day, to visit the ladies and practice with them, and learn and ask questions, and just spend time building relationships with them. One of the ways that Shannon's been able to be a blessing to the people there is through the kids. And she'll tell you later on, if you ask her about these two little girls here, that we've been able to be a part of a little feeding program with them. Because as you know, and can guess, Shannon has a love for babies. And she was a part of the birth of that little guy, and they're so close now. It's really neat. And one of the ways that we can be a blessing as well is we don't do a huge medical program because we are fairly close to town. People can go out to town and see a doctor and come back on the same day. But we do a little bit, and so we'll administer antibiotics, band-aids, and those sort of things, and take care of your infections. And it just opens up doors of opportunity for us to build relationships and build a trust with people. And it was really neat because as a result of this, we were getting ready to come home for our home assignment this time, and the Sunday before we left, a group of ladies, actually from another village that we'd been helping as well, came to our front door and wanted to visit with Shannon, and they pulled out the stag and dressed her up in the traditional context. And that was just their way of showing appreciation. It was really neat for us to be able to be a part of that. For me, I am in full-time language and culture study, and that involves a couple different aspects. One part of that for me is I'm in my office working with a language helper, working through recordings and pictures and asking questions, working on my computer. But for me, a larger part of my time has become just being out with the people and learning, visiting with them, asking questions, practicing what I'm saying, learning processes, what's this, what's that, how do you do that? And just asking, talking to whoever I can get my hands on at times, whether they're young or old, and just learning how to communicate with these people in a way that they would understand. And one of the ways that we've been able to do that each day is we have a little generator that gives us power in our house, particularly in the evenings, so we can have lights and charge batteries and whatnot. And so we put some power strips out for people to bring their flashlights and their cell phones. Everybody has a cell phone. To come and charge them. So it's like a captive audience for me. It's great. I can go and talk to them, you know, what their day is, and just get to know them, particularly the guys. But our generator is broken. I killed it. So if you're interested in knowing how you could help us in getting another one, just talk to me afterwards. I can give you some information on that, because it helps them and it helps us as well. But my time a lot of my time is just being out there, practicing with them, learning to do the things that they do each day. But why am I doing this? I want to learn how now, so that I can ask why later. Because we want to see, do, and experience life as they see and experience life. So when it comes time to teach them from God's Word, we can do it with clarity. We can do it in a way that will come with understanding to them and coming from their perspective. And of course, as in many things, language learning is sometimes easier said than done. Along our mother's ears. And these are some of the men that the Lord has really blessed me with, that have really come alongside me, taken me on as their own, and I've been developing some really neat relationships with them as they've been teaching me about who they are. And so we're so thankful for them. We did have co-workers when we first started the work, but for some different reasons, they had left. And so the last 9 months of us being in the tribe, we were alone, just Shannon and I and the kids. And so we had all the responsibilities upon us of working in the tribe. And there was a lot of stress, a lot of responsibility. And we've been praying for another family to be able to join us. And the Lord has blessed us with another family. This is Dennis and Valerie Easton. They're from the Pine Rock area. They have finished their national language study, and they're currently on home assignment right now as well. And so when we all return to the Philippines next year, joining us in the tribe to be able to share the responsibility of preparing to take the gospel to the Gatan people. So we're excited about that, and they're really a new family. Because the reality is, the Gatan people are still in spiritual darkness. They may look okay. They may look very religious, and they are, but what we see is okay. It's a very thin veneer, and beneath that is a lot of superstition and animistic beliefs. They are traditionally animists, which means that they worship their dead ancestors and the spirits around them, and they have a multitude of ways that they try and please them through different rituals and practices. And in more recent years, they've mixed that with different forms of Christianity. When you look at look under the surface, it all goes back to those animistic beliefs of trying to please the spirits and manipulate God to get what they want. And it affects them from birth to death. And so that's why we're there. Because death is a very serious thing. The Bible tells us that once man dies, that's it. He has no more opportunity to hear and be able to make that decision. And know that Christ died on the cross to pay the price for his sins. And that's it. But the good news is the Lord is preparing the hearts of these people even now. And we're excited to see what he has in store for them. And we're excited to see how the Lord has built those relationships for us with the Gatan people. And now so that we have the trust and we have the ability to be able to share with them the gospel message and disciple them. And we look forward to that. And it's happening in ways that we would have never imagined. And it's just so exciting to see that. Because we look forward to a day when a funeral won't be a time of mourning for them. It'll be a time of celebration of life everlasting. But until that day, time keeps moving on, and we have a lot of work to do. So we ask you to continue to be praying for us, as we will be returning, hopefully, to the Philippines, back to the tribe in May next year. And we'll be getting the other family set up with us there. You can be praying for us even now, as it was mentioned earlier, with Shannon with the pregnancy, just that the Lord would give her strength with that. Be praying for us as we are looking to increase our financial support before we go back. And you can be praying for us as we're still traveling quite a bit, especially on the weekends, to be able to share what the Lord is doing amongst the Gatan people. So pray for safety with that. One thing I would like to share with you before we close is the pastor had read a passage there this morning in 2 Corinthians chapter 5. And I'd like to just point out a couple things from that passage in the last few minutes that we have. Let me turn here to 2 Corinthians chapter 5. I really like chapter 5, 2 Corinthians. It's a really neat book. It's actually one of my favorite chapters because it talks a lot about our eternal hope that we have. But I'm not going to focus on that this morning. One of the things I'd like to focus on just for a few minutes is the motivations that we have as we serve the Lord, the ministry that we have. What's your motivation for what you do in anything? I used to think about, before we went to the Philippines, the year and a half before that, I had worked in a factory in Honda. And prior to that, I worked as a carpenter, and I really enjoyed it. But my focus was on my job. And when I worked in the factory, the motivation I had to work there was to provide the money that we had that we needed so that we could get ready to go. What's your focus, your motivation for the jobs that you do each day? When we're in the tribe, we have a different motivation. And in chapter 5, we see several of them, and I just wanted to point out a couple, one in particular. There's so many things that I could list here to talk about, but I won't for the sake of time. One of the things, motivations that we should have, we see, actually, if you just jump back a little bit, I should have actually had a pastor read from verse 9. Verse 9 tells us that we should have as our ambition, whether at home or absent, to be pleasing to Him. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may be recompensed for his deeds in the body, according to what he has done, whether good or bad. One of our motivations for whatever we do should be so that we can be pleasing to Him in everything that we do. That's why we're here. We're here to glorify the Lord, especially as believers. That's why He created us. He created us for the purpose of glorifying Him. Another motivation we see in verses 11 through 13 would be to have a good testimony and good through our character to those that are around us, especially to unbelievers. And whether they're looking for a reason to discredit us or they're looking for a reason, they're looking for the Lord. That the testimony that we have, the way that we act, can send them one way or the other. The testimony that I had when Fritz Shannon and I first had, the way that I acted, I drew her to the Lord. And that was really neat as we look at how the Lord used that. Another motivation, and this is the one I really like, they want to focus on, verse 14 and 15. It says, "For the love of Christ controls us." I'm actually reading from the NAS, if anybody's wondering. "The love of Christ controls us, having concluded this, that one died for all, therefore all died. And he died for all, that they who live should live no longer for themselves, but for him who died and rose again on their behalf." Think about that. I like the first part of that, especially where it says the love of Christ controls us. Another version talks about how it compels us. It, in a sense, pushes us forward. The love of Christ. If it's controlling us, it's going to drive us forward in our walk with Him, and in the testimony that we have for Him, and in reaching out to others for Him. I like how the message puts it this way. Christ's love has moved me to such extremes. His love has a first and last word in everything we do. Wow. And if you think about that, when I think about that in the context of us working in the tribe, let me tell you, we love working there. We love living amongst the people. We love the relationships that we have with them, friends that we have. But there are days where I stand back and I wonder, what in the world am I doing? If you know us at all, we're not outgoing people. We don't like to stick our necks out. We're very much like to keep to ourselves. And yet the Lord put us into this ministry so that we could reach out to others, which makes me rely on Him so much more, because it's not me naturally to do that. And that's what drives me, is the fact that it's His love coming through me. I have to look at these people through His eyes and through His love. Because, let me tell you, they wear on you. There's days where I want to just go out and scream at all the kids running around in our house and banging and making a noise and tell you, just get lost, would you? There's days where I feel like doing that. Or, the fact that somebody comes through our door looking for something at the most inopportune time. Tell you, whether it's medicine or an automobile or a tool, which they don't like to return unless you have to be hunting for them. You know, there's just all these different things that could really wear on you. And yet, we have to look beyond that. And that we are to be ministers of reconciliation, bringing them to Him. And I love verse 21 where it says that it's all because He made Him who knew no sin to be sin on our behalf. I mean, come on. What, if that's not a motivation, what is? The fact that all that He did for us, what's the least that we can do for Him? Is to be a testimony for Him that shows Him, if nothing else. If you don't witness one more time, just the fact that if you're walking with Him daily, it's going to shine through. And people will see that. And that will draw them to Him because of you. So we want to be able to represent Christ to everyone that we meet through our lives. And so I hope that just challenges your hearts today and helps you to see maybe what your motivation is or should be. Every day the Lord has to remind us of what our motivation needs to be as we serve Him there. And so, again, we just thank you for your part in that and the fact that you're supporting us financially and praying for us every day. We really appreciate that. Please continue. And so, what I'd like to do to close is just show you a little video. It's actually about some friends of ours working in another tribe in the Philippines. They have been working and preparing to present the gospel with this tribe for 10 years. 10 years they've been working to get to the point where they can teach these Bible lessons to them. And they're already seeing fruit from that. And it's so exciting. And there's days when they wonder why we're doing this. Well, they know what their motivation is. And so I'll just share that with you. And then when that's done, I'll just turn the service back over to the pastor.
Really encouraging these first few weeks of teaching, because you wonder, you know, you spend all these years in language and culture study and you just wonder how people are going to respond when they start hearing God's word, if anybody's even going to come and want to listen. One of the old ladies, her name is Muluk, we were sitting on the porch the other day together and she said to me, "Niece," she calls me niece, "you know," she said, "it's like we were asleep. We were eating, we were going to work in our fields, you know, planting our rice and harvesting and just living our lives day to day." She said, "but listening to God's word, it's so wonderful." And she said, "my liver is just full." She said, "it just feels so good just listening to God's word." One of Dave's translation helpers, his name is Tecido, when they were going through the Ten Commandments with Moses and learning about sin, he just said to Dave, "oh boy, if I had all the rocks out of the river, all the heavy rocks and the big boulders and everything," he said, "and you put them all together and piled them up in a big pile," he said, "that would be like the weight of sin on me." And he said, "I can't wait to hear how God is going to, you know, deal with that and get rid of that sin." He said, I just can't tell you how thankful we are that you and Julie came to teach us God's word." He said, "we know you've left your family, you've left your home, you've left your country, and I just want you to know how thankful I am," he said, "because this message is just amazing." It's been a real hard slog to learn this language, but just such a joy to us to be part of what God is doing there. Dave was a drywall hanger. I was just a clerk who worked for the telephone company. You know, we're not highly educated people, but God, I can honestly say that God has enabled us to do what we do. We know. You know, He's already changing lives, even though we're only, you know, in the first lessons of the teaching is already impacting their lives and opening their hearts and their minds to the light.